I was at a meeting earlier this week with my minister colleagues from the Unitarian Universalist churches in the area. We all meet together once a month. And I told my colleagues that I was planning on preaching on the theme of conflict this Sunday as part of several weeks of sermons around the larger theme of leadership, conflict within communities being a common challenge that leaders face, and fears about leading communities through conflict is a reason that many folks resist taking leadership roles. And conflict is also an appropriate theme for the Hanukkah holiday, which begins this evening. And one of my colleagues asked, what's the connection between conflict and Hanukkah? She was thinking about that part of Hanukkah that has to do with lighting the menorah, the festival of lights, the miracle of the oil, enough only for one day that lasts for the full 8 days. She was thinking about Hanukkah as the family celebration and the 8 days of giving. For her, the spiritual theme of Hanukkah was dedication and faithfulness. It was about joy, not conflict. But the background of the Hanukkah story is conflict, a big conflict. The rededication of the temple follows an earlier profanation of the temple. The Feast of Lights is the closing scene in a story that begins with 20 years of war. The joyful occasion of Hanukkah is a victory celebration after a Jewish family, nicknamed the Maccabees, led their people in a religiously based war against the Greek Seleucid Empire, who had occupied their land for 150 years after Alexander the Great. So the Hanukkah story is a story about great conflict, and it gives us one example of a way to right a wrong and resolve a conflict. Like so many religious stories that resonate centuries after they happened, the celebration of the next 8 nights gives us an opportunity within the frame of that old story to meditate on a common spiritual theme in our own lives. How do we resolve conflicts? How do we decide what's worth fighting for? How do we heal from past conflicts? Conflict within our families, perhaps, or a conflict within our communities, such as the church. Conflict within our nations, or conflict between nations. So the Hanukkah story is this. About 1,000 years before the Common Era, I'm starting way back, the Hebrew-speaking people organized themselves into a unified nation under the kings Saul and David and then Solomon. The capital was at Jerusalem, and Solomon built a great temple there in Jerusalem. After Solomon died, the nation divided into two. The northern area took the name Israel and was a loose collection of 10 of the original 12 Hebrew-speaking tribes. The southern kingdom took the name Judea, composed of the other two tribes. The divided kingdom lasted about 200 years until about 700 years BCE, before the Common Era, when the northern kingdom was conquered by the Assyrian Empire under the leadership of Sargon II and Sennacherib. The 10 tribes of the northern kingdom became the 10 lost tribes of Israel that you may have heard about. Jerusalem, still the capital of the southern kingdom, was sieged by Sennacherib, but not conquered, mostly because the Assyrians were now themselves under attack at their rear border by the growing Babylonian Empire. The Babylonian Empire eventually overthrew the Assyrian Empire, and around the year 600 BCE, the Babylonians, under a general named Nebuchadnezzar, came back to Judea and conquered Jerusalem. And that's when Solomon's temple, the first temple, was destroyed. With the fall of Jerusalem, the residents of Judea were transported east into Babylon in what is known as the Babylonian captivity. About 50 years later, the Babylonian Empire was itself destroyed by an empire even further to the east called the Persian Empire under a leader named Cyrus. Cyrus's policy was that conquered people within his empire could retain self-rule as long as they understood their vassal state and respected the empire. So the Judeans were released from their captivity and were allowed to return to the area of their former kingdom and rebuild. So it was then, now we're about shortly before the year 500 BCE, that the Judeans rebuilt the temple in Jerusalem, now called the Second Temple. The Persian Empire continued to expand westward into the Mediterranean and eventually attacked the Greek nation. The Greeks fought back and under Alexander the Great defeated the Persians and then created a Greek empire stretching all the way into modern-day India. The Hebrew-speaking people watched their rulers change from Persian to Greek, but continued to live and worship as they had. After Alexander's death in 325 BCE, the Greek Empire was divided into four parts, each part ruled by a different general. At first, the Greek generals allowed the subject people to retain their individual cultures. Eventually, though, the Greek ruler sought to forcibly convert all the residents of the empire to Greek culture. This practice was called Hellenization, after the old name for Greece. For the temple in Jerusalem, this meant setting up a statue of Zeus in the Holy of Holies and converting the temple to worship to the Greek gods. Many Jews, I am sure, were happy to adopt Greek culture. The Greeks were powerful. The Greek culture was filled with literature and art and philosophy. Jews who converted gained much. But to others, the attempt to annihilate Jewish culture was too much. Around the year 170 BCE, a Jewish family led by a man named Judas and nicknamed Maccabee, or the Hammer, organized a Jewish revolt against the Greeks. After 20 years, the revolt was successful. The Maccabees established a new Jewish kingdom called the Hasmonean Dynasty. The Hasmonean Dynasty ruled the area for about 100 years until the area was once again conquered by a foreign empire, this time the Romans, around the year 60. In the year 40 BCE or so, Caesar Augustus installed a local king loyal to Rome named King Herod, and then, well, the next part of the story is for a few weeks from now. Hanukkah marks the time when the Maccabees retook control of the temple in Jerusalem, threw out the statue of Zeus, and rededicated the temple to Jewish worship. Hanukkah means dedication in Hebrew. The dedication ritual required burning oil lamps for 8 days to purify the space. The priests could only find enough oil for one day, but they went ahead anyway, and then a miracle. The lamps stayed lit for the full 8 days. Today, Jews light 8 candles on a menorah, one for each day, and they play with a little top that's called a dreidel that has 4 sides on which are printed the letters Nun, Gimel, He, and Shin. Those 4 letters stand for the Hebrew phrase Nes Gadol Hayah Shin, which means a great miracle happened there. In Israel, the dreidels say Nes Gadol Hayah Po, which means a great miracle happened here. When the Greek rulers changed the former policy that allowed the Jews to retain their culture, their religion, and their Hebrew language, and decided now that the new policy would require all residents of the empire to adopt Greek culture, speak the Greek language, and practice the Greek religion, they created a conflict. Some Jews assimilated. To them, the advantages of identifying with the Greek state were many, and perhaps the values of Jewish culture to them were not so obvious or not so important. Other Jews, led by the Maccabees, resisted, and they started a revolution. All people face this issue, this internal conflict between acceptance and assimilation, or resistance and revolt. Jews face it today in the United States. How important is it to be Jewish anymore? Must I speak Hebrew? Must I belong to a Jewish community or keep kosher in my house? In what ways is it acceptable to capitulate to the U.S. culture because the United States is my community? And what for me of my Jewishness must I hold on to because that is also my community? For the Maccabees, the values of retaining Jewish culture were obvious and important enough to go to war over. The Greeks weren't our community. The Greeks were outsiders, occupiers who threatened our community. So Hanukkah is a holiday based on conflict. The question for those who would choose assimilation or those who would choose resistance is, who is my community? The way we are encouraged to tell the Hanukkah story is to valorize the Maccabees who fought a war in defense of their Jewish community. By implication, the lesson is not to be like those Jews who accepted Hellenization and assimilated. That's the Hanukkah story. But requirements of choosing assimilation or resistance happen all the time, and the righteous choice is not always one or the other, or so clear. In the gay community, for instance, in the 1990s, there was a feeling among some that the fight for marriage rights meant assimilation, and instead that we should stake our claim as sexual radicals, providing a new model for the larger culture to learn from. In Unitarian Universalism, we're having a lot of conversation in the last few decades about our culture of worship. To be more inclusive of people outside our mostly white and middle class core, some recommend that we shift our worship culture to include more explicitly theistic language, more emotion, more mystery and ritual, more music from outside the Protestant hymnal tradition. But those shifts would come at the cost of losing what many identify as essential components of our Unitarian Universalist culture. So do we resist that change, or do we assimilate to a changing culture? Who is my community, is the question. It's common, for instance, in the United States that first-generation immigrants retain their original language and culture in their new country, and then usually the second generation grows up speaking English, and they value being American over their parents' national identity. And by the third generation or later, immigrant families might fully identify with U.S. culture, but also start to become wistful about that earlier identity that they're lost and want to reconnect to it. So who is my community? If it starts to feel that my community is the new community that's drawing me forward, then I will assimilate. If my community is the old community that feels like it's slipping away, then I will resist. Hanukkah is a story in the way the holiday encourages us to tell it, where resistance was the righteous choice. But when the answer to the question, who is my community, is something like, my community includes people who are different from me, includes people who speak a different language, includes people who worship a different God or no God, then the lesson of Hanukkah isn't quite right. In that case, revolution would be self-defeating because it would be a civil war against your own larger, diverse community. But assimilation is also self-defeating, right? Because it would mean letting important personal cultural values be swallowed up and disappeared by this larger group. The problem with resolving conflict by battle is that when one side or the other wins, the other side loses, and then our collective future is either bereft entirely of that vanquished culture's gifts, or some remnant of that vanquished community hangs on, but with unresolved resentment and anger. The problem with resolving conflict by acquiescence is that also one side wins and the other side loses, and our future is bereft entirely of that culture's unique gifts, or some remnant hangs on with unresolved resentment and anger. The problem with the revolution model is that it leads to a victor and a vanquished, and a community cannot be healthy when some of its members feel beaten up and defeated. The problem with the assimilation model is that assimilation simply feels like voluntary defeat. It's vanquishing without the revolution. And again, a community cannot be healthy when some members feel their important values have been dismissed or ignored. What's required then is a third way to resolve conflict, a third way that is neither revolution nor assimilation, a third way that rejects those two choices of Hanukkah, holy war or Hellenization. The third way, when conflict arises within a community where crowning a victor and a vanquished is unacceptable, is neither revolution nor assimilation, but transformation. Not my way or the highway, but a new way. Not the reestablishing of an old way that the dissenters can either grudgingly take or leave, but a new community, a transformed community, in which both sides of the conflict create a new way of being together. With this third way of resolving internal conflicts, conflict can become not an occasion of stress and anxiety to be avoided, but an opportunity for growth, a welcome opportunity for a needed new beginning, a chance for a beloved community that may have become ossified to transform into a new way of being beloved. Imagine a conflict arising in a church community, and instead of the members choosing sides and inciting a holy war, they choose to, as Hosea Ballou says, agree in love. That doesn't mean making nice. Agreeing in love doesn't mean pretending to agree with the other side when you really don't mean it, then continuing the fight through indirect means and sabotage. Nor does agreeing in love mean giving up and feeling defeated and leaving the community, or remaining but waiting for the chance to take back my church. Agreeing in love means recognizing when we have a conflict, that's okay. We will get through this. We have a conflict, and we need to find some way to resolve that, but the first thing is to agree that we will recognize the bonds of love that hold us together. And our conflict resolution will be undertaken within that container of love. What we will seek, because we agree in love, is a conflict resolution that doesn't result in some winners and some losers, but results in transformation for everyone. That means I'm willing to change, because I know you're willing to change too. Within churches, within families, within nations, and even between nations, because Unitarian Universalists affirm the goal of world community, we strive for conflict resolution through conflict transformation. A new culture for a new day. Not exactly the way it was, but not dishonoring the way it was either. Not entirely a brand new thing, but a new thing that grows from the old roots and transforms what was essential about the old into a new expression. When we sang Light One Candle at the beginning of the service, you may have noticed that the song actually names eight different candles, one for each day of Hanukkah. Two of those candles were a candle for all we believe in, that anger won't tear us apart, and a candle to bring us together with peace as the song in our heart. Hosea Ballou assures us that if we agree in love, there is no disagreement that can do us any injury. And our centering hymn explained even further what that means. If we in love unite, debate can cause no strife, for with this love insight, disputes enrich our life. In a community that's united by love, conflict is not a danger to be avoided, but an opportunity to enrich our lives by inviting us to transformation. No one says that transformation is easy or comfortable. It seldom is. But in a faith community whose goal is transformation of our lives and of our world, conflict could be a guest, welcomed as any other into our community of love.